everyday living, your life. These are the methods, tools, and modalities that will help you live and feel extraordinary. I will cover a few of these in this WOW. Note, if you are currently in a high-intensity interval training program like the ones I often prescribe, then these restorative measures are even more important to help you recover and re-energize. Together, it's an ideal combination to help you be your best. Yoga. It's over 2,000 years old and a great form of exercise. While there are hundreds of different types of yoga, find a flow that works for you. Hatha, Iyengar, Ashtanga, Bikram, Vinyasa, Kundalini. While traditional forms of strength training often shorten muscle and fascia, yoga helps lengthen the fascia and restore balance. The breath work alone is therapeutic, and it calms the central nervous system down. Remember, you do not need to be Gumby to do yoga. The purpose of yoga is to help you open your body, creating balance and strength. Pilates. I love when my athletes incorporate Pilates into their program even once a week. Pilates provides full body conditioning to build flexibility, lengthen muscles, and strengthen the legs, abdominals, arms, hips, and back. There are some very specific, unique exercises for the feet, for ankle mobility, for hip mobility, and core strengthening. While Pilates is a great form of strength training for most, I love it for the restorative aspect as well. Therapeutic massage and body work. Why do we wait until something hurts to get a massage? Despite hundreds of different forms of body work, the bottom line is that soft tissue work manipulates fascia to help restore balance and alignment. A great goal is 1 hour of massage each week. A minimum goal is 1 hour of massage a month. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Massage also allows you to disconnect with the busyness of life. There's a lot to be said for that. Simply put, I believe folks who get regular massages are just happier human beings. Chiropractic and physical therapy. Alert, alert, alert. You do not need to be hurt to see a chiropractor. As a matter of fact, I'm going to encourage you to visit a skilled chiropractor before you get hurt. Chiropractors can really help your neuromuscular system as well as your skeletal system. They do far more than adjust the spine. Nowadays, many chiropractors infuse highly touted progressive protocols as part of their treatment services. ART, which is active release therapy, cold laser technique, Graston, kinesiology taping, and much, much more. Chiropractors and physical therapists can play a pivotal role in helping you perform and feel your best. Their services should not only be associated with recovery from injury. Foam rolling. Some call it poor man's massage. I say it's a smart addition to massage. Foam rolling creates self-myofascial release. Myo is muscle, fascia is connective tissue that's enveloped around every tendon, ligament, nerve, muscle, bone, and organ of the body. You can do this practically any place, anywhere. Purchase an inexpensive foam roller or grid for less than $40 and use it every day. Just 10 to 15 minutes on the mid-thoracic region, glutes, IT band, calves, quads, and lats will go a long way towards soft tissue pliability. And this is a great thing. One of my original coaches and mentors, Tom House, taught me something so important when he said, "You're as strong as your weakest link and as efficient as your worst movement." That means if your hips are tight, you can't perform your best. If your back is hurting, you need to find out why and do something about it. Listen to your body and change your routine to address your weaknesses. You see, I'm convinced that my back injury was the final straw that broke the camel's back. When I was playing football, I didn't stretch much. I didn't do much yoga. I certainly didn't foam roll or get regular massage and body work. I didn't recover. I didn't restore. What I did do was a ton of heavy lifting. Power cleans, squats, bench presses, lots of reps, lots of weight. I did very little core training, very little rotational training, very little joint integrity work. Most of my training was uniplanar, despite my position, quarterback being primarily a multi-planar and rotational activity. I never focused on recovery until I was hurt, and then all I thought of was recovery. Where was the yin to my world of yang? Today, I wonder what could have been had I done things differently back then. I will never know the answer to this, but I know for sure that the experience of injury and recovery made me such a better coach and trainer. I share this story for one reason, to save you the pain I experienced. Please don't wait and learn this lesson the hard way. Take it from me. Take action today. Restore, recover, and re-energize to start feeling your best. Action step. What yin activities can you add to your current routine to help you perform and feel better? Write them down, commit to them, and most importantly, do them. An additional resource sits for you over at todderkin.com/wowbook-workouts. Wow number 8, sushi guy. All in? I've often said that there's nothing worse than being half into something. A job, a relationship, a responsibility, heck, life for that matter. People who are half in, I call fence walkers, and they do no good to an organization, they do no good for a business, they do no good for a team, heck, they do no good for themselves or for you. Fence walkers will never find their passion until they commit themselves fully to something and be all in. I met a fence walker once that just made me shake my head. I just landed at the John Wayne Airport in Irvine, California, and wanted to catch a quick bite to eat at a local restaurant. So I opted for sushi and found this little sushi joint in a neighboring strip mall. As I walked in and sat down, I jokingly said to the waiter, "You guys have the best sushi in Orange County, right?" And he kind of shrugged and didn't say much. That was a red flag to me. So I continued, "Seriously, do you guys have good sushi?" Then he replied, "We are okay, but if you want the best in town, it's right down the street." He seriously said that to me, and then he literally explained where it was at and even said that it was within walking distance. As quick as you can say jumping Jack LaLanne, I was out of there, and I walked to the other sushi place. And he was right. I love the other place. But that is one employee I would not want working for me. Oh yeah, there's a better fitness center down the street. You go out the door, make a right, and you'll like it better. Are you kidding me? Even though I know that would never be the case, I can't believe an employee of a company would actually steer a customer to a competitor while the customer was already seated and ready to do business with them. I left shaking my head. If I were that guy's boss, he would have been fired on the spot. Hey, I was actually glad he told me about the other place because it was very good and I had a great meal. But I couldn't get over the fact of the employee of the first sushi place telling me about the better one and essentially prompting me to leave. Maybe he thought he was being helpful. Maybe he was working the only job he could get. Maybe his parents ran the restaurant and he was expected to work there and resented it. I don't know, but his fence walking not only wasn't helping that sushi place, it also wasn't helping him. Indifferent, lethargic, blasé, uninspired. That's the kind of person he seemed. His head was not in the game. Hey, sushi guy, we only get this one life, so pick a side and commit. Care more, love what you do, live inspired, and no matter what, either be all in or be all out. Don't be a fence walker. I don't want to play with people on the fence, and neither do you. What can you do to be more all in? And this includes your personal and your professional life. It includes your health and fitness, your relationships, your commitment to keep learning in your profession, everything. Encourage more, acknowledge more, praise more, be more present, be more invested, be a problem solver, not a problem seeker, be the solution, not the problem. And this is for anyone on a team, in a family, in a relationship, in your pursuit of a new skill or hobby. Be all in. If you want more, give more of anything. Energy, money, leadership, effort, focus, time, presence of mind. Bottom line, if you want more, be all in. And if you don't want in, then get out. Thanks, Zushi guy. I appreciate your honesty, but you need to get a new job or get all in. Don't be that guy or girl. Be all in. Action step. How can you better be all in with what you currently do? In your family, in your relationships, at work, in your spiritual life, and with your health, nutrition, and fitness. Do you need to invest more time, energy, or emotion into being all in? Or do you need to be like the sushi guy and get out? Listen to your gut. Make a decision that you believe is best for you, and then be all in to what you are doing. Enjoy your sushi. Wow number 9, cleanse. Sometimes you just need to cleanse, to detox, to get the junk out of the trunk. It'll make you feel lighter, simpler, and more alive, refreshed and rejuvenated. Humbled and grateful to continue doing the difficult but rewarding work of life. Here are 11 great ways you can cleanse and detox your life. Number 1, rise and shine. Wake up, stretch, say your morning prayers, and smile. Begin your day with a big glass of water and lemon to help alkalize the body and support elimination. Number 2, be grateful. Write in a gratitude journal for 10 minutes. Who are you most grateful for in your life? What are you most grateful for in your life? Number 3, be inspired. Read or listen to inspirational material for at least 10 minutes. It could be a great book you are reading or a podcast in which you listen to something related to business, personal development, or spiritual awakenings. Number 4, be green. Eat a ton of greens, or at least have one green drink per day. Number 5, be healthy. Be sure to eat or drink every 3 to 4 hours so you don't feel hungry and risk an insulin crash. Number 6, be mindful. Eat your food slowly and savor it. Number 7, be hydrated. Drink a lot of water to help flush toxins and transport nutrients. I always recommend half your body weight in fluid ounces of water. Number 8, be active. Move your body today. Honor it with where you are at. Maybe you need a good sweat. Maybe you need yoga or meditation. Or maybe you need both. And if you are struggling to get it in, do it first thing in the morning or hire a coach. Number 9, be pampered. Rejuvenate every area of your body that needs a little boost. Schedule a massage, facial, or manicure. Or take a warm bath filled with Epsom salts and lavender. Number 10, be rested. Hit the sack early. Aim for at least 8 hours of sleep. Number 11, don't watch TV. TV often contaminates your mindset and fills your time with anything but inspirational material. So avoid it today. Unless it's NBC Strong, of course. Cleanse your mind, body, and spirit today and every day. Think about what you can do to further nourish and improve your mind, body, and soul, and then do it. Action step. What bad foods can you eliminate from your diet? Or what good foods can you add to your diet? What can you do for yourself to work on rejuvenation? Maybe it means you schedule a massage or get some body work this week. How about your exercise program? Do you need to get more yang and turn up the intensity a few notches? Or do you need more yin by infusing some Pilates, yoga, meditation, or mind-body work into your program? At home, can you purge your closets and eliminate some old clothes that you don't need anymore? Someone probably needs them way more than you do anyway. Wow number 10, belief. If you can believe it, you can achieve it. What I'm about to share is a true story. When Sylvester Stallone wrote his original Rocky I script, he was near broke. After countless meetings and tries, no one showed real interest in buying the script. He was so broke as a starving actor that he could hardly even afford his apartment rent. He was close to living on the streets. After a couple months, one company finally offered Stallone $30,000 for his script. But the stipulation was that he was not allowed to play Rocky Balboa. And all along, that's what Stallone had wanted. So the company rebuked, and Stallone was told to keep shopping. Sylvester got so broke that he actually had to sell his dog to pay his rent. And he did, for $50. And a month later, a different company came by and offered him some money for a script. More importantly, they offered him the role of Rocky Balboa. And the rest is history. The six Rocky movies went on to gross over $1 billion, and Stallone went on to star in over 60 films. His net worth is now over $400 million. And it makes me think back to the beginning. Would you sell your dog because you believed in something so much that you knew it was worth something way more than what others put a value on? A script, a product, a program, a business. That's the belief that Stallone had when he had nothing. And that's the belief it takes when you have everything. Side note, in Rocky I, the dog Buckus that appears is actually Stallone's real dog that he'd sold. After he got paid, he went back to that person who bought his dog, and Stallone bought Buckus back for $3,000. Now that is awesome. And that is belief. Belief. It's easy to believe when things are going great. It's not easy to believe when you are faced with serious adversity, challenge, or obstacles. I think the Sylvester Stallone example is a great one to depict a real person who has overcome a lot. He had to start somewhere, and where he is today is far different than who he was back before he sold his manuscript. And that's because of his belief. Belief. It's the thing that often separates winners from losers. It's a lack of belief that often stifles people to live in mediocrity their entire lives because they're afraid of the what ifs. What if I fail? What if I succeed? What if I don't earn a scholarship? What if I don't get selected for the team? What if I make money on this program or business and then lose it all? What if people make fun of me? What if people ridicule me or hate me or don't like me? What if I'm ahead of my time with this idea and it doesn't work out? What if someone's already doing this something similar to what I'm doing? What if I lose my job? What if I don't have benefits? What if, what if, what if? What if you stop saying what if and started saying When I fail, I will get back up and do it over again and be smarter and better. When I succeed, I'm going to be able to have more time, freedom, and money freedom, and I'll give back to society even more. When I fail and people make fun of me, I will use it as fuel to continue building my life. When I try, I will be content to know that I did my very best and that I will continue to move forward each and every day. And then, ultimately, you must believe it. Action step. What is it or who is it that you need to start believing in more today? And what can you do to further demonstrate your belief? Start believing today. What's it going to be? When I will, fill in the blanks. There is an additional resource for you at todderkin.com/wowbook-belief. Wow number 11, love. One of the best coaches of all time is Coach John Wooden. He won an unprecedented 10 national championships at UCLA from 1964 to 1975. He amassed 664 wins and only 162 losses, an over 80% win percentage. He is the first person to be inducted to the Basketball Hall of Fame as both a player and a coach, as he was a three-time All-American at Purdue. And the list goes on and on. Coach Wooden was also an author, and one of my favorite books of all time is his Pyramid of Success. In the book, he shares his 21 principles of success. And Coach Wooden talks about how hard work and enthusiasm are the cornerstones of success. Fast forward many years after he first published his book. It was actually after one of the last talks he gave before he died at the age of 99. A reporter asked Coach Wooden a question on your Pyramid of Success book. 30 years after you wrote that book, if you were to write another edition, would you change anything about the book? Would you add anything or take anything out of the pyramid? Coach Wooden thought for a moment and then replied, I wouldn't change any of the words because all of the words are still great principles to success. But I did leave one word out, and that one word should be smack in the middle of my pyramid, and that word is love. For I would never have won 10 national championships without loving my players. I could not have helped mold my players as men without loving them. Yes, love. Love should be smack in the middle of my pyramid. Now that's powerful. One of the best gifts I've ever received was an autographed copy of Coach Wooden's Pyramid of Success. On it, he wrote these words. Success is a peace of mind, which is a direct result of self-satisfaction in knowing you did your best to become the best that you are capable of becoming. Now, those are some wise words from the Wizard of Westwood. Thanks for the great lesson, Coach Wooden. Time to make sure that love is in the center of all we do. Much love and much success. Action step. How can you love more this week? Who can you spend more time with? How can you express your appreciation for them more? What can you do to let them know that you truly and genuinely care for them? Wow number 12, breakthrough. They say that big-time players step up in big-time games, and I think most players dream of having breakout performances. I was sitting inside the RCA Dome in Indianapolis, Indiana, in 2012, watching a crop of NFL combine athletes, each doing his best to have a breakout performance. Yes, each and every one of the 300-plus invited athletes in attendance all have had massive success thus far in their athletic careers to put them in their position to succeed. Great high school careers, college scholarships, all-star and all-American statuses in college, records broken, but more importantly, there was a lot of hard work. There was a lot of sweat, blood, tears, and adversity that many times went unnoticed. And of course, there were a lot of dreams. And these athletes were there at one moment in time searching for that one breakout performance, something that would separate them from everyone else in the greatest job interview of their life. A blazing 40-yard dash, an incredible bench press, outstanding field work, and solid interviews are all part of the process of ultimately providing these young men the opportunity of a lifetime. Realized dreams, potential reached, financial freedom, the knowingness that you gave it your all and succeeded. Aren't we like these NFL combine athletes in many ways? Constantly searching for a breakout performance. Unfortunately, sometimes there are breakdowns before there are breakouts or breakthroughs. Breakdowns often lead to breakthroughs. Breakthroughs allow us to have breakouts. Sometimes it takes years and years and years of hard work and toil to get it right. Sometimes our course will get redirected several times until our exact purpose is aligned perfectly with our passion. But the bottom line is this. As we continue to work hard for our own breakthroughs and breakouts, know that it is the cumulative effect of our daily actions and discipline that set you up for excellence. Dreams, passion, surrounding yourself with people that elevate your mindset, hard work, and the ability to focus on winning each and every day. That's what builds greatness. That's what builds champions. Whether you want a breakthrough in your business and professional world or a breakthrough in your personal world, focus your mind on the discipline and determination it takes to do the little things that will ultimately allow you to have a breakthrough. Define it, write it down, read it over and over again. Work at it, practice it, continue to hone your craft, and do all the necessary things needed to have your breakthrough. Action step. What is it that you want to have a breakthrough on in your life? Where are you currently stuck and need to get unstuck? What is your dream, and what specific things do you need to start doing or continue doing to help you get there? Have your breakthrough today. Wow number 13, rituals. My kids used to swim competitively, and while they competed for different reasons, they both spent a lot of time working on swimming. While my son Luke, 10 at the time, swam like a fish and was very competitive, my 8-year-old son Brady was quite the opposite. While Luke loved to compete, Brady did not love the meet so much. As a matter of fact, something happened at his first meet that proved to be a big life lesson. On the day of his first meet, Brady woke up feeling sick. I explained it was just butterflies and nerves in his stomach. He had a tough time comprehending that and insisted he was sick. Melanie and I were quite confident it was just a bad case of the jitters, so we made him go to the meet. Let me preface this by saying swim meets are long, really long. Your child swims for about a minute and then has about 2 hours off before the next race. Did I say these meets are long? Yes. And let's just say that I don't necessarily love sitting around all day waiting for a 30-second race. And it's even worse when your son is moaning that he can't swim, that he's scared, that he's not sure he can do it. I tried every mental trick of the trade, breathing techniques, visualization, imagery, getting him warmed up in the warm-up pool, positive talk, mantras, you named it, I tried it. Bottom line was, he just needed to get in the darn pool and compete, but he wasn't going to race until about 12 noon, and it was still only 10 a.m. Oh. About 20 minutes before his race, Brady really started to get worked up and scared. I talked to Coach Sean and told him how Brady was feeling, that Brady was really nervous. You know how sometimes your own kids listen to their coaches more than you? Yeah, even my kids are the same way. As a matter of fact, I was just about to pick him up, throw him in the pool, and chase him if he didn't turn around quickly. Miraculously, Brady mustered up the courage, jumped in, and competed in the 50-meter freestyle. He came in last place, and I was so dang proud. He shot out so fast in that race that it was actually first for the initial 25 meters. And then he just fizzled, and it didn't even matter. He competed, and he did his best. He immediately felt better after the race, and it proved to him that it was just nerves. Lesson learned, compete. Now let me share with you the cornerstone behind the compete lesson. The cornerstone is ritual. Every night we have a bedtime ritual in our family. This is what Luke, Brady, and McKenna say to Melanie and me. I'm so happy, I can do anything, and I love my mom and dad. Melanie and I then say back, I'm so happy, I can do anything, and I love Luke, Brady, and McKenna. And then all together, we say, we're the Durkins, we always do our best, and we never give up. Something I pointed out to Brady on the way home from the meet that day was that his swim meet was a great example of doing your best and never giving up. It's one thing to say it, it's another to do it. And when you're scared, it's when you have anxiety, it's when you have fear that you have to remember that you most deeply stand for and believe in what. But by practicing a ritual, saying it every night, it gets in your head that you must live it. Lesson reinforced, rituals count. And practicing a ritual that gives you the strength of heart and mind to jump in and start kicking when the time comes will only ensure that you live out your best self. Now start practicing those rituals and routines every single day so you can dive in and attack head on also. Be a contender. Live out your best self. Action step. Identify where in your life, work, family, friends, fitness, you feel some fear. What rituals and routines can you develop to help you be more confident in this area that might be scaring the heck out of you? And then go do it. Wow number 14, people and leadership. I love studying great coaches in any sport and on all levels. One of these coaches is Dick Vermeil. Coach Vermeil coached 3 different NFL teams, the Philadelphia Eagles, the St. Louis Rams, and the Kansas City Chiefs. In 1999, he led the Rams to a Super Bowl championship. He amassed 126 wins in his 29-year NFL head coaching career, and he was a 3-time NFL Coach of the Year. He has positively impacted thousands of men in his coaching tenure. On this one particular evening in 2013, I had the opportunity to hear him speak to a few hundred fitness trainers and professionals at a Perform Better conference in Providence, Rhode Island. And he was awesome. Coach Vermeil revealed his 7 common sense coaching points that make the foundation for any team, business, company, church, or family. In all 7 points, there was one commonality: people. Without great people, there are no great businesses, no great teams, no great organizations, no great families, no great companies, and no great brands. Coach Vermeil talked about how the most important resource of any company is its people, their personal dignity, pride in what they do, and the trust that they have in management. At the end of every business calendar year, an important and first question a leader should ask is, do we have better people in our company? Do we have better people on December 31st, year's end, than we did on January 1st, year beginning? Are we better today than we were at the start of the year? Think about what Ford said in its mission statement. Our people are the source of our strength. Think about what Hilton Hotel says in its value statement. People are our most important asset. You are a leader of your business, your team, your family, your organization, regardless of your title. Your people need to know what to expect. Your people need to be kept informed. Your people need to be trained. Your people need to be challenged. Your people need to be held accountable. Your people need to be appreciated. Your people need to feel that you care about them. Your people need to be recognized and celebrated. Your people need to be led. Your people need to be able to grow and advance. Your people need your feedback and coaching. Your people need to be listened to and heard. Your people need to be trusted, and they must trust you. Your people must be loved and love each other. People before process. People before profits. People drive performance. Celebrate all the people in your life today by spending meaningful time with them, building them up, and making them feel appreciated. Your day will be more fulfilled and your people will be better. Action step. Think of 3 new ways you can recognize the people in your life today. How can you make them feel more appreciated and loved? Think of 3 new ways you can help your people set goals this week. Think of 3 new ways to hold your people more accountable this week. Think of 3 new ways to communicate with your people this week. Wow number 15, best practices. I was recently asked this question by a client of mine. Do you ever go through a period of time, short or long, where you feel stale? And if you do get stale, what is it that gets your juices flowing again? What is that one thing you can turn to that revs up your engine, excites you beyond belief, pushes you to get better every day? Well, to answer the question, yes, there are times when I feel stale, and there are times when I feel like I'm actually on fire. I think that's only human nature to feel both. But the object is, how do we stay more on the fired up side than the stale side, correct? I believe there are several reasons why we sometimes may feel stale, and they typically all deal with our best practices or the lack of doing these best practices. Here are 13 of my best practices for you to consider. Number one, get up early. Two, don't turn your phone on right away in the morning. I wait until my morning routine is complete. Number three, prayer time in the morning, or you can call it meditation or quiet time, but get it in minimum 10 minutes every day. Number four, journal time, morning or evening, for 10 minutes total. Number five, eat a great healthy breakfast and then good foods the rest of the day. Number six, work out daily. Sometimes it's vigorous, sometimes it's stretching and foam rolling, but do something every day to get better. Number seven, high quality sleep. I try to personally get a minimum of 7 hours. Eight, read or listen to inspirational material that inspires your best thought process. I like listening to podcasts in the morning when doing my cardio work. And while driving, I like listening to recorded talks on business or leadership. Number nine, spend time with people who challenge you, physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. Number 10, get time in nature every week. A hike, a walk at the park, time at the beach or in the mountains, snowshoeing or skiing. Number 11, include recovery strategies as part of your weekly plan. Massage, yoga, foam rolling, warm baths in Epsom salts or hot tubs. Number 12, follow a supplementation program to make sure all nutrients, vitamins, and minerals are adequate. I feel this is about 10% of overall nutrition. I advocate at least a multivitamin, fish oil, amino acids, glutamine, and a post-workout recovery drink for most active people. Number 13, in the 45 minutes before going to bed, don't watch TV. Opt for reading or journaling instead. If and when you do these things, you typically are going to feel fired up and ready to conquer the world. Action step. Identify your best practices, write them down, and then maniacally focus on getting them done. Wow number 16, barriers and bridges. On June 5th, 1964, on a clay track in Compton, California, America's Jim Ryan became the first high school runner to break 4 minutes for the mile, running 3 minutes and 59 seconds flat as a junior hailing from Wichita East High School in Wichita, Kansas. Then as a senior, he beat his own time again when he ran 3 minutes, 55 seconds, .3. That record stood for 36 years. Think about that. Running under a 4 minute mile. That's crazy. Even when you're in the best shape of your life, could you run around a track in under 60 seconds and then repeat it 3 more times? I think I was in the best shape of my life when I was in my early 20s and playing college football. And at that point, I could get around a track in 1 minute and 16 seconds. One time. Not 4 times. Ugh. Only 5 high schoolers have ever run under 4 minutes in a mile. That's 4 times around a track. Interesting to think that 3 people did it in the late 1960s. After Ryan, Tim Danielson broke the barrier in 1966, and Marty LaCoury ran a sub-4-minute mile in 1967. And it wasn't until Alan Webb ran 3 minutes, 53 seconds, .43 in 2001 that Ryan's record fell. And then in 2011, Lucas Verbikas became the fifth high schooler to run a mile under 4 minutes. Kind of interesting that Ryan broke the record and then two other people did it in subsequent years. And then nothing until 2001. That's 36 years without any single high schooler running under a 4 minute mile. Could it have been that the switch to the metric system in the track and field in the 1970s meant fewer races at the mile distance? Could it have been that the trend in the 1980s and 90s in large part was for young track athletes to undergo less intense training sessions? Could it be that these guys in the late 1960s were just that good? Bottom line is this, only five high schoolers have ever accomplished this feat, and that is quite amazing. Remember, Roger Bannister actually broke the 4 minute mile in 1954, but he was a graduate medical student, not a high schooler. Big difference. Our wow is barrier and bridges. Until Ryan ran a sub 4 minute mile, there was a major speculation whether a high school runner could accomplish this. It stood as a barrier. And then once Ryan did it, he ripped the lid off the barrier and it served as a bridge to prove that it could be done. Why is barrier part of our wow? Because you have to face barriers in your life every day. And you must embrace them, tackle them, hurdle them. Is it your mindset, your belief system? Is it your environment? Is it your current job situation? So when does a barrier, whether it be a sub 4 minute mile or throwing 5,000 passing yards in a season, become a bridge to inspire greatness and breakthrough achievements? Jim Ryan broke a barrier, thus making a bridge so that two other high schoolers, LaCorey and Danielson, followed with similar breakthroughs in subsequent years. Dan Marino had the single season 5,000 plus yard passing record since 1984. Then Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning subsequently broke through this feat in 2012, 2013, and 2014, respectively. Why and how did the barrier become a bridge to greatness? There are many other examples in sport and in life when a seemingly insurmountable challenge or obstacle, a barrier, is broken and then leads to similar achievement by others, the bridge. What determines whether a barrier will be broken? Is it training, talent, mindset, hard work, focus, inspiration, or motivation from someone else? Great coaching, desire, self-preservation. Think about your business. What is it that you want to do, but for whatever reason, you have not been able to create a breakthrough to get it done? Is it talent, tools, time, fear, lack of motivation that's acting as a barrier? That is where others come in. Maybe it's a Jim Ryan or a Jackie Robinson or a Neil Armstrong taking that first step on the moon. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Who showed the courage and fortitude to perform and break through barriers, experience greatness, and create the bridge to open it up and inspire others to do the same. A barrier is a bridge. Without barriers, there are no bridges to higher achievement. A barrier is not to be perceived as a red light to the way things are, but rather a green light as to the way things can be. Attack your barriers, create your bridges, and have massive breakthroughs. Action step. Examine your life or business and identify what barriers you need to overcome. Write them down. Furthermore, write down what can happen to your life and business once you build the bridge to overcome those barriers. Wow number 17, voracious. I need to share an amazing feat with you, like really amazing. And it deals with my son Brady when he was just 8 years old. In September 2013, my wife Melanie gave Brady his first Harry Potter book, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. He fell in love with the book, devouring it in less than 4 weeks. The book is 309 pages, fairly impressive for a young kid. And before you know it, the kid started devouring every Harry Potter book, nonstop, absolutely voracious. And 6 months later, by March 2014, Brady finished his last Harry Potter book, and there were 7 books overall. Here are the books, how long they are, and how long each book took Brady to devour. Book number 2, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, 341 pages, done in 2 weeks. Book number 3, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, 421 pages, done in 1 week. Book number 4, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, 724 pages, done in 6 weeks. Book number 5, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, 870 pages, done in 8 weeks. Book number 6, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, 652 pages, done in 4 weeks. Book number 7, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, 759 pages, done in 5 weeks. What's even more amazing is Brady just recited these titles to me. The number of pages in each of